The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code DKHOOPS. That's code DKHOOPS for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
It's the VC show. It's the VC show. It's the VC show.
Show season 2, yeah, we back again. Got the world tuning in for show, so go and tell a friend. iHeart got me on the squad, I slam dunked the win, so go on there, kick your feet up so you can listen in.
Hey, what's that show?
It's the VC show.
Hey, what's that show?
It's the VC show.
Hey, what's that show?
It's the VC show.
It's the VC show.
Season 2, let's go!
All right, welcome to the VC show. I'm your host, Vince Carter. March Madness has come and gone, but it was fantastic. A lot of great basketball on the men's and women's side. A lot of drama and playoff positioning happening in the NBA. And I'll be discussing that and a lot more with my special guest. So put your hands together for Grant Hill.
The lob. The fans got what they wanted.
Vincenzo reigns supreme.
You had the pleasure of calling Coach K's last game too, right?
I don't know if that was pleasure.
My bad. I didn't say it like that.
But I did. I mean, look, think about this. I had the pleasure of calling Coach K's last game, Roy Williams' last game. I did Jay Wright's last game. There's somebody else. Jay Wright was in the Final Four, that same Final Four, which was Coach K's Final Four. Jay Wright, they lost to Kansas, and then he retired. I did Roy Williams in 21 at Purdue, and they lost in the first round. I can't remember who they lost to. And then he retired shortly thereafter. And so, you know, to be able to see these icons, these legends, and to do their last game, like, man, like, how lucky am I? Because right. I have the utmost respect for all of these guys, including Roy, you know, Roy Williams. But – you know, for Coach K, it was hard. Like it was a hard tournament. I did all their games, and it's tough because at any moment it could be his last game. Mm-hmm. And unlike with Roy Williams and Jay Wright, you didn't know that was their last game. But in Coach's case, he had already said this was going to be his last season. So every game, there's an opportunity, you know, that they could lose, and so. You know, you're kind of wrestling with that and not that you're emotional or anything like that, but like you want to do a good job and you want to give him, you know, in case there's that moment where he loses, like you want to be able to say the right thing as a former player. And so obviously then playing Carolina, you know, of all teams, it was just like, Like, you know, it was hard. Like, even just going into that game, it was a hard game. I try to be objective. I try to be partial or impartial. I try to, you know, like, be fair. I'm not going to run from the fact that I went to Duke, but calling a Duke game, I try to, like, you know, be, you know,
call it as you see it.
Call it as I see it. And, but once the game was over and the finality of the moment, it was hard. Like, that part was hard. And then, you know, they brought me on the set with Charles and Kenny.
That's right. That's right.
And I got to sit there and, you know, I'm like, right. Oh, man,
listen,
I gotta,
to Kenny.
I got to hear Kenny. But you know what? Kenny was really good in the moment. And I know we like to go back and forth and you know, chirp at each other. But, like, I think he understood the significance of the moment and really paid his respects to Coach K and understood it was, you know, the end of an era. And so, yeah, I mean, it was an honor. It was a difficult, you know, part of me was like, I wish he had just lost the week before so he didn't have to lose to Carolina.
Right, so you had to lose to them, yeah.
but no, I mean, he and like Roy, like Jay Wright, like they've been, you know, so important to the game and its success, and their legacies are just absolutely incredible. You know, Roy Williams was our coach when we practiced against the Dream Team. He was at Kansas at the time, but he was our coach. And so we shared that incredible moment together. And he recruited me when I was a sophomore in high school. And he was still an assistant coach at Carolina. And he still, you know, I mean, Roy's, you know, an unbelievable, Coach Williams is an unbelievable person. But he came in my high school game and we played against Crawford Palmer. I don't know if you remember that name, Crawford Palmer, who ended up playing at Duke. He was a McDonald's All-American. He was on our first championship team. Didn't play much. Transferred after his junior year. But Crawford was like 6'10", big guy. And so we played against them. And I scored the last 18 points of the game and brought us back. And we won the game on an alley-oop. I was doing my Vince Carter impersonation. And Roy's always like, that was one of the best high school games I've ever seen. And so that's coming from a Carolina guy. But I was, like I said, I grew up a Carolina fan and had the utmost respect for Coach Smith and for Roy Williams, you know, just icons, like icons of the game. Incredible.
Let's transition real quick. I want to ask you about this. I don't know if we've ever talked about this, but your acting career. How did that come about? I got the opportunity to do the Moesha show. I've been in a few things, but, like, you did Living Single. And how did that come about? And, you know, was that something you were kind of up for? Where you, you know, did you feel like you were kind of stepping out of your shell a little bit?
Yes. 100% stepping out of my shell. So before I did Living Single, I taped, like, a month before, I taped a segment. Remember that show Home Improvement with Tim Allen?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, that took place in Detroit. He was a Michigander. He's living in Michigan, had the show Tool Time or whatever. So I went on there and I kind of played myself. I had my jersey on and, you know, I had a segment or whatever. And so I'm thinking, okay, this is easy. I get a free trip to L.A. You know, like, it's cool. I'm on set, whatever, whatever. So then they're like, we want you on Living Single. And so I honestly think, like, it's the same sort of thing. I'm going to make a cameo. You know, I'm going to make a cameo.
Right. Right.
And so they tape on a Tuesday. And we had reading. We had, the table reading for that week's script on Wednesday, the day after the taping of last week's show. So I get in, like, Tuesday night, and they have, like, the script waiting for me at the hotel, you know, at the lobby. So, you know, I don't really read it. Like, I don't know what I'm getting myself, but I don't think what I'm doing is a whole lot. So right. I don't read the script, but then I show up the next day at the table reading and we're reading it and we're all reading our parts, you know, around the table and I'm reading it for the first time. And so I'm like, first I'm like, damn, I'm in a lot of scenes. And then I'm like, oh man, I'm like, they got me flirting with Latifah, like her character, like, you know. And then like, you know, and I'm like, oh man, I got a kiss, like all this stuff. Like, I'm like, hold up. Like, you know, I didn't want to like punk out or, you know, be difficult because I'm a guest, but I didn't think this was what I was signing up for. I'll just put it that
right,
way.
Right.
And so, you know,
cause you were in the whole episode.
I was in like pretty much every scene I was in.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, her character's love interest and,
right,
you know, yada, yada, yada. And so, you know, so we had, you know, we rehearsed and kind of know where to be and sit. And then we had like a dress rehearsal, but we never rehearsed, you know, the couch kissing scene. And so I didn't know where that was going and how that would go. And, you know, I just kind of went with the flow on that. It was acting and she was great. And she was a great friend and helped me through it. I guess I can tell when the episode
comes on.
Yeah, because people tweet me or people call me or text me and be like, yeah, I saw you on Latifah or whatever. I'll just say this. I wasn't invited to do any more after that. So clearly my acting wasn't that good.
For you as a superstar getting drafted, was there a major transition for you as a rookie?
You know, I think I came in the league and I mean, this sounds maybe arrogant or whatever, but I came in the league and I was putting in work from day one. Like day one, I was putting up numbers.
Yeah.
And I think like I came in 25-10, like my first game, and maybe had a string of 10, maybe 12, 15 games where I had 20 points or more right out the gate. And so,
But there again, you are a four-year college player. So, you know, you've matured and you were kind of ready for that at that point also, as opposed to 1 year in college, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think back then, I mean, you obviously were the same. Like when you came out and you were a top five pick, you know, there was an expectation that you could be the face of a franchise. There was an expectation that you could be an all-star, a guy that could lift the team. And, you know, like that was what was expected. I don't know if those same expectations exist, but that was the case, I think, in the 90s. I mean, think about it. You had Derek Coleman in 90. 91, you had Dikembe. I'm thinking of number one picks. 92, Shaq. 93, Chris Webber. 94, Big Dog. You know, like you're coming in right away and you're expected to be able to come in and help a team and put numbers up and score and be that guy. I think what helped me, and I think the one thing that I was pretty good at, and I could handle the basketball. And, you know, you had big guys before like Magic and Steve Smith. Even Jalen did it when he ran point at Michigan. But you would kind of handle the ball and back people down and kind of use your size to get to where you wanted to go. And I even did that my senior year at Duke. I played the point my senior year. And in the summer, we're playing pickup ball before I'm heading to Detroit. And we're at Duke. And Quinn Snyder, who played at Duke, had been an assistant coach for Larry Brown.
Yeah,
the
he
Clippers.
Recruited me. He recruited me.
And then my last year, he was a grad assistant. And I think eventually went on and became an assistant. But like he was like, dude, you don't have to play like Magic. You can handle the ball and pick up ball. You can do that in the NBA. And so when I got to the league, I don't think there were a lot of small forwards who were comfortable with somebody coming at them and like bop bop, you know, coming at them like that. And so that really helped me get to where I needed to go. And
literally.
Yeah. No, I didn't shoot the ball. I just went to the rim. Like, and I could get to the rim, you know, whenever I wanted, I felt. And so, mm-hmm. you know, now people adjusted and they get the scouting report on you. But I remember at first I'm calling my boys up like, man, look, man, I'm killing these folks in the league. Like, hey man, they can't. You know, and that was until they figured you out. But I think the hard part for me was the off the court. And because, you know, in college, even though you're a celebrity on campus, even though you're playing for a big time program, there's still an innocence there, you know, and you're still around other people in college and people, you know, you're trying to go to school.
A little enclosed. Yeah. Especially for Duke.
Yeah, Duke. I mean, you're just, we spent a lot of time at Chapel Hill. I mean, we were over there, but you know, I just felt like, and then all of a sudden, like, people know how much you make, you sign this big contract, like, you know, and you just feel like a target. And so now it's like, you got your guard up and you just are very, and so that was an adjustment for me, just, you know, kind of being launched into this, you know, different world, if you will.
Right. And I think throwing, you know, I mean, on top of that, deemed, you know, the next MJ and shoe contract, obviously, you know, Fila goes to another level. You know, you become the face of Fila with that. Like, I can't imagine, because I've been there, but that's why I was asking, you know, how did you handle that? I mean, obviously, basketball is basketball, particularly when you get comfortable and the game slows down. But it's typically an adjustment for younger players in transition, because on the court, it's like, yes, you're in a safe place, you're in your place. And then off the court, you have to adjust living that new life, understanding your popularity to go with it.
Yeah, no question. I mean, look, it took me, you know, I had a lot, you know, there was a void. I mean, Jordan was gone. He was playing baseball. You know, I had played 120 some odd games at Duke. You know, whether you liked Duke or hated Duke, you saw us play. And then my game was, you know, kind of exciting. I did things, whatever. And so there was just a lot of attention. And I'm trying to figure the game. I'm trying to figure the league out. Like, I'm still trying to understand the NBA game. And I'm trying to win. Like, that was the thing. Like, I wanted to win. I didn't even really care about all that. I just wanted to, like, how do we, you know, we won 28 games my first year. You know, like that was hard. And so all of this you're dealing with and trying to process and make sense. And it was uncomfortable, you know, it was uncomfortable because I didn't feel like I was ready for that. Like, I didn't feel like I earned it or deserved it. I felt like it was just thrown at me. And eventually I felt like maybe, you know, year two and I even think the Olympics, you know, now I'm in the Olympics and I'm playing every day against Scottie Pippen. And I'm holding my own and I'm doing, you know, like, he had his moments. I had my, like, I think by year three, like, I felt like, okay, like I'm supposed to be here now. You know what I'm saying? But it was a whirlwind at first, man. It was those first 3 months in the league, man. And just all the attention. Like, that was something that I wasn't expecting that.
So you can't, like, just be a kid and just like you used to and just kind of just walk around. Yeah. You get the attention on college campus, but it's kind of like, kind of fades away and you can kind of just be yourself as opposed to this new world.
Yeah. I mean, you're living with people. You're living, you're going to class, you're socializing. Yeah. Like, you know, okay, that's Vince Carter and it's a big deal. But you know what? After a while.
But he's my classmate also.
Yeah. I see him in class. I see him in the cafeteria.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I see him, you know, in the dorms. Like, you know, it's so you know, I mean, it's a big deal. I don't want to say it's not a big deal, but it's not as big a deal. I guarantee you this. You being at Carolina in Chapel Hill while you were there playing was a lot different than Vinsanity in Toronto.
Yeah.
No question. Yes. I can guarantee you that, you know.
Yes.
And so, I mean.
Oh, yes.
And so it's great. You're doing things, but it's also just, it takes a minute to get comfortable with what that is, if that makes sense.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. With same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more, don't miss out as the NBA postseason winds down. And if you're new to DraftKings, you gotta check this out. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code DKHOOPS. That's code DKHOOPS for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Zero Foxtrot isn't just a brand, it's a way of life. Founded and operated by veterans, Zero Foxtrot's unique apparel and gear echoes the grit of the warrior culture. Zero Foxtrot dedicates itself to producing content, honoring the sacrifices of forgotten heroes of the past, and connecting history to the present. Embark on a journey with Zero Foxtrot today at ZeroFoxtrot.com. It's not merely our products, it's about the ethos that we embody. Rugged, resilient, and timeless.
How did you cope with the injuries after being what I know you were in Detroit, and what everybody obviously knows you were in Detroit, going to Orlando and the injuries with the ankle and so on and so forth? I know you had multiple surgeries. How did you cope with that? And the reason I ask, I think I know the answer to it, you know, but the reason I ask, because for that young player who's going through that now, whether it's in high school, but understanding, how did you, at the height of your career and the excitement of you and T-Mac about to play together, how did you handle that and were able to still bounce back and have a career?
Yeah. I mean, I sometimes ask myself, you know, how I did that. I think
first, I've seen the work you put in.
Yeah. No, I mean,
I've seen the work.
I think first of all, being an athlete conditions you to like think you can do the unthinkable. You know, you're in a game, like the game against Kentucky. Like, you know, like, okay, we come out, we believe we're gonna execute and win. Like you almost have to be delusional at times.
Think
about it. Like, you got to be delusional sometimes to think, like, okay, we're going against this number one team, but we're going to beat them. Like, that's part of competing. That's part of the mindset that you have to have. Right. And so maybe I was slightly delusional, but, like, I felt like, okay, it, you know, I convinced myself that, like, once the ankle heals, you know, I still got tread in the tires, you know? It's not cartilage. It's not something. The problem with my ankle was it never healed. And so I was trying to come back. It was never healed. And it was just one thing after another. And so we never fixed that. And once we fixed it, it was, you know, 4 years later. But, you know, there's a lot that went into that. But I do think I suppressed my feelings to get through that, which is not uncommon. When you go through something tough, sometimes people do, you know, suppress things. And I kept thinking I'm going to make up for it on the back end. Like, I'm going to play till I'm 40. Like, I always mentally just kept, and emotionally just kept thinking about, okay, you know, once I get right, I'm going to play. But it was hard. It wasn't easy. And, you know, what's amazing, and you know, and I bring this up because you're about to go through this Hall of Fame experience. But once I went through the enshrinement and the whole ceremony and I'm in, and then you get away from it for a couple of months, it got a little dark because those feelings were conjured up. And I started thinking, like, man, I got in the Hall of Fame just really
like
with a half a career. Like, I didn't even really get a chance to see it through. I got hurt at 27 and was never the same. and like I said, came back and played and had fun and enjoyed the end of my career. But like, I didn't get a chance to see it through, and I got mad. And like, I felt like I was dealing with those feelings and dealing with those emotions then, as opposed to dealing with them in real time in the early 2000s. And so it really, you know, I used to judge everybody who wrote a book, and I used to say, oh, like anyone cares to read your book. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's, you know, I was that guy. I was so narcissistic to write a book. Like, you know, that was me being just cynical or whatever. But that prompted me to write a book and tell my story. And the motivation was not to be a bestseller. You know, the motivation was to tell what happened with my injury.
Get it all out.
Yeah, because I felt like, you know, it was a different time. We didn't have the social media. We didn't have, like, and things were kind of mysterious and people didn't know. And so, like I just wanted to tell what happened. And in the process of telling this, you know, writing this the book and then getting out and marketing it, it was like a little bit, it was therapeutic, you know, it was able to deal with that. And it didn't change anything. I mean, what happened, but I don't think.
But it changed the most important thing. And that was you and your mental moving forward.
Right.
After still having this honor, like you just said, like you just reached the pinnacle, in my opinion, of the Hall of Fame. And you still months later going to this dark place.
Right.
So, you know, I think this satisfaction, like you said, it was therapeutic.
It was therapeutic. And it just helped bring closure and have peace, you know, and peace with regards to the career. So I was saying, you know, I kind of maybe didn't tell the full truth, but I said, like, it validates what you didn't do. And it does to a degree. But with me, like, I was still harboring those feelings and got, you know, got resentful a bit and got mad at doctors and, you know, trainers and people who I felt let me down. And so, like, I needed, you know, and that was the impetus behind writing my book, was to sort of walk the reader through exactly what, not for sympathy, not for pity. I just needed to get that out. I needed to tell somebody, you know, I needed to get that out. And I felt the book was the only sort of platform to do that. And I don't think I realized that I needed to do that, but I did. And in doing that, like, okay, like I feel good. And not that I needed validation from the public or whatever, but it was just part of like processing and dealing with all that stuff that I went through.
And not realizing that was still in there that needed
right.
to come out.
Right. No question. No question.
What's life been like for you as an owner? And do you take the same approach? You know, I'm combining two questions here. You know, what's life been like as an owner? One, but two, you know, and you started with the Hawks. Do you take the same approach with the Hawks as you do with Orlando City and, you know, Orioles, as far as how you go about your position? You right. know, because I think it's different as a basketball player, you know, because that's what you play. But now you're in ownership in another sport. How do you go about that? And how has life been as an owner as well? I wonder.
Well, first of all, it's been a dream of mine, you know, since even before I entered the NBA. Like, you know, who are the people who pay these guys all this money to play? Like, I want to be them. You know, like that was always sort of in the back of my mind. And, you know, I mean, you played on a number of different teams. And I always say that every locker room is different. You know, every locker room dynamics, and maybe you get traded or you sign in free agency with a different team. And like you come in and you got to feel it out. You got to feel yes. out the personalities,
Absolutely.
The egos, the dynamics. And it takes a minute to do that. But every locker room is different. And sometimes from year to year, you could be on the same team and you lose two players and you gain two players and it changes things a bit. And so I say that to say that like every ownership partnership is different, you know, and mm-hmm. there's a different dynamic at play. And so, but look, first of all, it's fun. I think they're incredible investments. I'm a big believer in sport, and the power it has in our culture and society. And I'm, you know, I think that the upside will continue to ascend. I'm hoping, fingers crossed. It's also an investment that's fun. It's something you know, you can invest in a piece of real estate. You can invest in a stock, you know, all of which are great investments. But like a team, like and following a team and having that sort of emotional and financial connection to that team, Like, it's incredible. And you live the ups and the downs and you feel it in more ways than one, but you feel it.
Right.
So, you know, I think I have sort of different roles in the different situations. The Orioles situation is still early and still sort of developing. But, you know, I think I bring a unique perspective. I'm not just bringing money to a partnership. I'm bringing experience. I'm bringing someone who's been in the locker room, understands, you know, the player dynamics, player coach dynamics. You know, I can watch us play, let's say in Atlanta, and I can get a sense of what's going on without necessarily being there or even, you know, talking to anybody who's close to the action. And so, you know, but I also am mindful that, you know, I'm not the managing partner. And, you know, I have a voice, but I don't have the loudest voice. And I'm respectful of that. But it's fun. It's exhilarating. It's tough. I kind of actually, the soccer and baseball are two worlds that I'm not as familiar with. And I've enjoyed, like, engaging with our general managers and talking about locker room dynamics and culture and picking brains and exchanging and sharing ideas. I can't help with, you know, strategy. You know, I don't know soccer or baseball like that, but I know good locker rooms and I know bad locker rooms, just as you've been in some good ones and you've probably been in some bad ones. And there's something that separates the two. And, you know, when you have a good locker room, you know, with talent and health and a series of other variables, but a good locker room gives you a chance for good results. And I'm a firm believer in that. But the role of ownership is a weird one. Like it's you know, like you're kind of a glorified cheerleader. You know, you hire good people, mm-hmm. you give them vision, direction, resources, you empower them, but then you also kind of got to get out of the way and let them do their job. And you want to be engaged, but you don't want to be too engaged. It's a weird dynamic. And, you know, it's something that I'm not sure I have fully figured out. And I don't know if any, you know, owner has figured out, you know, the perfect sort of working dynamic, if you will.
Well, I'll say this to that real fast. And I think, you know, your voice, your experience, truly matters. And, you know, I was there when obviously LP Lloyd Pierce always said he would love to have you around just because of your knowledge. You've been around, you played 19 years, you've seen it all. You know, obviously you experienced it all. So I can imagine your voice being just as important in any locker room, you know, as an owner or otherwise. So.
No, I appreciate that. And I mean, look, I think we need more former athletes in these positions. And just
I'm trying, man.
Well, no,
I'm
trying. I know. I hear you. I mean, and the reason for that is, you know, we talk about in corporate America, we talk about it in any kind of, you know, organization, any group, any team. You know, you want diversity, and we think of diversity as, you know, gender or ethnicity, which we do, which is important. But we need diversity of perspective, diversity of thought. And, you know, I always liken it to, you know, if you're going to the park and you're going to play basketball, you're not going to put together a team of everybody that does the same thing. You know, you're going to try to find that point guard, that big guy, maybe a guy who can guard the other team's best player. Like you want to put together diversity in terms of skill sets.
Sounds like you're trying to put together an Olympic team.
Well, that's true. That's exactly
weird.
It.
This is weird.
No, but to get to that point, like, you need diversity of perspective, yes. I think, in ownership. And players have a unique perspective that unless you've been in that situation, you really just don't understand.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. With same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more, don't miss out as the NBA postseason winds down. And if you're new to DraftKings, you gotta check this out. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code DKHOOPS. That's code DKHOOPS for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Zero Foxtrot isn't just a brand. It's a way of life. Founded and operated by veterans, Zero Foxtrot's unique apparel and gear echoes the grit of the warrior culture. Zero Foxtrot dedicates itself to producing content, honoring the sacrifices of forgotten heroes of the past, and connecting history to the present. Embark on a journey with Zero Foxtrot today at ZeroFoxtrot.com. It's not merely our products. It's about the ethos that we embody. Rugged, resilient, and timeless.
I thought, you know, we talked about this obviously, but I thought this summer, last summer, was a great stepping stone. Obviously, not the results you want, but for the future. And one thing I tell people all the time is that at some point, as the stars of today fizzle out and walk into the sunset, you want to already have your future stars in the grooming process, particularly when you're USA. So you want them to have this experience. So to have experience, you have to be put into the fire to go through it. And, you know, you think back to 04, when we struggled, you know, as some of the older guys, you know, a lot of us kind of didn't play. And then you're now adding LeBron, Melo, you know, a lot of the young stars, they had to gain the experience. So you go through the struggles. Yes. We should out athlete them and all that stuff. I get it. But it's a different game, as you know, in the Olympics. So I think, you know, the way you're handling this, and obviously you've heard me say this before, but the way you're handling it, giving the experience, giving to these young stars of today the experience they need, with that, you're going to take your lumps. But, you know, some of these young guys who are going to get to play with these superstars, and now in what, I guess that will be in 5 years, let's say, look out, because now you're just reloaded, but you don't have to go through the grooming process again, you know, with so many guys. So I don't envy you at all.
you've been there. You've been as a player and you've been around the game. You understand sort of the challenge. The FIBA game, I have the utmost respect for. It is not easy. I think sometimes in our arrogance, as citizens of the United States, we feel like, oh, we're the best in the world.
We're dominant, yeah.
We should just show up and win. It's not the case. The Dream Team in 92, you know, part of what they did, obviously they dominated, but they helped globalize the sport. The NBA right now is almost, I think it's 30% international players. The fear that they used to have of international teams and players of us is gone. And there have been examples of teams who beat the Team USA in the last 20 years. And so, but last summer it was hard because we lost. And certainly we felt like we had a chance to win gold. But the guys were incredible. Like, they gave us everything. It was a long commitment. We were gone for 6.5 weeks. We got all new guys in the pipeline. Everyone who was on that World Cup team last summer, it was their first experience on the men's national team. This upcoming summer with the Olympics, and hopefully at some point here, in the near future, we'll you know, we'll be able to announce our team. But, you know, we have some legacy guys who've been a part of multiple, FIBA experiences. And we have some young guys, who've expressed interest, and we have guys who are in their prime. And so hopefully we can pick a roster, one, and most importantly, that gives us every opportunity to win a gold medal. But then two, that can get representation from every bucket. You know, the older legacy guys, the guys who are kind of in their prime, and then the guys now that are on the come up who have a chance to be great, great players in the league for years to come. And sadly and unfortunately, you know, you can only pick 12. And we have just some incredible guys, incredible players, who many of whom are worthy of the experience. And so there's some tough decisions. I know you talk about you're not envious, but there's some tough decisions that we have to make. Yeah. That's part of leadership. You got to make those tough decisions and live with them. But we're grateful for everyone's interest and guys wanting to be a part of it. And, it's gold or bust. That's the expectation. That's the standard. And, we win gold. We look good. And if we don't win gold, then, you know, it's back to the drawing board. So, but I'm excited. I'm excited about it. I'm excited about the opportunity. I'm excited about watching this upcoming team come together. Pursue this really, really difficult challenge of trying to win an Olympic gold medal.
Well, that's awesome. And I'm putting my bid in not to play, but hopefully get to be able to call the games to watch it, because obviously it's going to be, I think, magical. And I think every player, I mean, we heard a lot of these guys, superstars, coming forward saying they want to play. And I'm sure they've talked amongst each other while, echoing their want to. So it should be fun to watch. And, hopefully I get to call something magical. But I'm gonna say something to you. Like, I want to ask you this, and then I'll let you get out of here. It makes me laugh because for those who don't know, you've been dealing with your oldest child in mixed martial arts.
Yes.
And how have you been able to deal with that? I know her. I've seen her as a young girl growing up, and obviously watched the video, and I it's nerve wracking for me. How has it been for you? For those who don't know you and how you've dealt with some of her fights.
Yeah. So my daughter is an MMA fighter. She's had 3 fights, amateur, and. Her first fight was in,
and she loves it, by the way.
She absolutely loves
thirsts
it.
For it.
Yeah, it's funny because when she first started taking jiu-jitsu and sort of announced that she wanted to do this, my wife Tamia and I, we did everything in our power to like block it. Like
you got
to
tell them the story. Tell them the boxing story.
What's the boxing story?
Well, you took her to front row to deter her.
So she announced in like the summer of 19, she was getting ready to go into her senior in high school. And she was like, I want to take jiu-jitsu. I want to pursue something in mixed martial arts. And my wife and I are looking at her like, mixed martial arts? Like, you've never been in a fight. Like, we need some mixed martial arts. Like, and you know her. Like, she's not who you would peg as a fighter. Like, she's that's not really her personality. But all right, take the jiu-jitsu. It's good for self-defense, yada, yada, yada. And then as she got into it, she wanted to go to a UFC fight. So for her birthday, I took her to a UFC fight in Raleigh at the PNC Arena. And it was late January of 2020, so right before COVID. And, my wife was nervous. I said, honey, look, we got seats right here, front row. Like, I promise you, once she sees this, and she sees it up close and, all that goes into it, she's going to want nothing to do with this. And so we go and we're there for the undercard. And we're there the whole night. And then we come home and we get home and, we get in the door. And I'm like, so what do you think, Myla? And she's like, Dad, I could be a champion. And my plan backfired, and if anything, it inspired her. And,
right.
But, everything she's done since that moment, like she has worked at it incredibly hard. Sometimes a little too hard. Like I worry she goes a little too hard, but, mm-hmm. That's what she wants. And, That's what makes her happy. And as a parent, you know, it does more harm than good when you try to deter them from doing something they're passionate about. And so we've come to grips with it. We consume a lot of alcohol at her fights. That's the only way we can get through it. And, you know, yeah. I heard this quote the other day, and, you know, it's like, as long as your kids are happy, you know, as a parent, you're only as happy as your saddest kid. And so if this makes her happy and this is something that she enjoys, and she just, you know, has a passion for, then we're happy.
So I take it Lael makes things, your youngest, makes things a lot easier for you and Tamia, because it's just, I mean, not just soccer, because that can be gruesome and brutal as well. You know, but knowing her personality, she's a bully out there. She's definitely a bully, but like, she has you guys like traveling a lot. So I guess that's kind of the other side of it, you know, as well, because obviously more tournaments, but not as stressful as Milo.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, I Vincent golfs, and you're not going to get hurt in golf. I mean, you know, golf is not, and I'm not knocking that. I'm just saying, like, golf. But I'm sure it's apparent you're still stressful. Like, you're still, you know, and because you, I think nothing gives you more, like, nothing is more rewarding to see your kids doing something and having success. Mm-hmm. And nothing is more like watching them lose or watching them go through some adversity or pain or whatever. Like, it's harder to take than it was if you went through it. Yeah, it's like that's part of being a parent. It's also necessary. I mean, the good and the bad is part of, you know, it's part of life. But yeah, I mean, it's exhilarating, man. I enjoy following them. And even if they weren't in sports, if they, you know, were in music or whatever, they were in the chess club. Like, if that's what they want to do, then, you know, we're all in it, and we'll learn it and support it. And, but I get more joy out of their successes than I ever got out of my own. And so we're there. We're at, you know, we're at the soccer games, and we got our little, you know,
you're all over. You're going. You want to go?
We're all in. We're all in, man. And actually, you know what? We're gonna miss it, man. We're empty nesters. Like, we were talking about it recently. Like, when Lael's off in college and hopefully playing in college, you know, we're gonna miss, you know, those games and practices, and, you know, that's such a part of your life. And and so we just enjoy every minute of it, and try to be supportive parents through it all.
I heard that. It's nothing like it. And in closing, I'm going to say, you still rock the feelers? You still have any?
I got a whole bunch of them. I got what size are you?
Hey, 15. We can talk. Well, Grant, thank you, man. I appreciate you so much, man. I hope everybody enjoyed this episode, and thank you for Grant kind of opening up and bringing us into his very, very busy world. The VC Show, once again, will be right here once again next week, so tune in. Let's go!
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Zero Foxtrot isn't just a brand. It's a way of life. Founded and operated by veterans, Zero Foxtrot's unique apparel and gear echoes the grit of the warrior culture. Zero Foxtrot dedicates itself to producing content, honoring the sacrifices of forgotten heroes of the past, and connecting history to the present. Embark on a journey with Zero Foxtrot today at ZeroFoxtrot.com. It's not merely our products. It's about the ethos that we embody. Rugged, resilient, and timeless.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.